So EDM.com is our partner in this show. If you're not familiar with EDM.com, it's the world's largest curator of anything electronic dance music. They have dozens of subgenres and different styles of dance music and even hip-hop and pop, all kind of stuff on that site. So go over there and check it out. This week, we bring you the EDM.com track of the week. It's called Movements. The artist is Fam. And this thing is blowing up. They're at over 7 million plays on SoundCloud. And check it out. I think you'll like it. And let us know what you think. Post a comment on Twitter at Rebel Radio Net.
Yeah. That body's a blessing, girl. I ain't trying to pressure her. She messed with the temperature. I wrote the song, but I am the messenger. Through the metropolis. There is no stopping this. Flowers and kisses, yeah. I heard you like chocolate. Light up the candles. Tune up this channel. It's the ride of your life, girl. My room is Orlando.
All right, well, thanks for being here. Welcome back to Rebel Radio. Our guest today in our special West Side studio.
This is nice, actually.
Yeah, thanks. This is our office. We usually record out of Hollywood, but it's fun to do it by the beach.
West Side is the best side.
Absolutely, we're two blocks from the beach.
Yeah, that's
which we never go see.
That's the right distance from.
I come every day. I ride up the beach.
Oh, that's right.
That's how I get to work.
You're good. You're good at that.
It's great. It's the best commute in the world, man. On the bike.
I believe it.
Can't beat it, dude.
So our guest today is Tuxedo.
Woo!
Mayor Hawthorne, Jake One.
Yes.
Thanks for being here.
Oh.
Glad to have you guys. I'm excited to hear, you know, what's the latest. I know we've known each other and done a bunch of work together over the years. We are don't know you as well, so we're excited to learn what's up with Jake One. But thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Good to be here. Glad we could finally make it happen.
Yeah, thanks.
Absolutely. So Tuxedo is a collaboration between the two of you. It's one of couple side projects for Mayor Hawthorne.
He has like five other albums coming.
One of many.
Next year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, I like a lot of different. Like a lot of different styles of music.
He's got a polka one dropping.
Yeah.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about
record.
What's that?
Going back to my Jewish roots. Yeah. Dropping my klezmer record.
Nice. You got to do that. Got to keep it real.
Yeah. My bubby's gonna love that one. It's her favorite.
Hey man, you got to do something for the family, of course.
You gotta keep them happy.
So talk maybe a little bit about how that works, how you switch gears, and you know, from a business perspective, why is that a good idea?
From a business perspective, I don't know if it is a good idea. but for my sanity, it's just so important.
Yeah.
You know, I listen to every, I mean, I really do probably have some klezmer records at home. Like, I listen to every kind of music in the world, and I love it all so much. And
he really does, actually.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, Jake is a little more focused when he goes to the record store. He goes to the soul
section. It doesn't take me that long.
Yeah, he's like, okay, I'm done. And I'm like, wait, I didn't go through Brazilian records yet, and I didn't go through the, you know, the punk rock stuff yet. So
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I love it all, and it's sort of a gift and a curse, I guess.
Well, so how does it affect then, like, sort of how does each project affect whatever you do after that? Like, so you're working on Tuxedo now. You're also working on a Mayor Hawthorne
record,
right?
I am working on my next solo record right now. Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. I feel like when I'm able to sort of, I don't know, I'm just so schizophrenic, I guess, when it comes to making music, that like if I'm forced to focus on one thing for too long, you know, I get frustrated with it, and I need the other outlets, you know, to get that sort of, you know, it helps me to go back, and you know, making a Tuxedo record helps me tremendously to then go back and get, you know, back into a Mayor Hawthorne solo record. It's
just, and you know, we did a lot of the album while he was recording all three of his solo albums. So
we've been working on the Tuxedo thing for, you know, 6 years or something.
So it was kind of, you know, he would.
It's been such a long time.
So how did it finally come together?
Well, you know, it just got to a point where, you know, he was putting out where does the door go, right? Mm-hmm. That's what it's called. And initially he wanted to use some of the songs for that album.
Got tired of sitting on them,
and then
it just
became time. Like, okay, we gotta do some of these records.
Right,
so that's we had
20 songs, yeah. Tuxedo yeah. songs that we had just, you know, recorded over a period of years, mm-hmm. just getting together, you know, a couple weeks at a time, and
so, you know, there was a couple factors. There was, you know, the records were starting to get old to us,
right,
and then. You know, Get Lucky came out and these other ones came out and we were kind of like, damn, we don't want to look like we were late right, on this. Like, right. We've been doing it.
We were ahead
of the game. So,
yeah.
And even just seeing the success of those, like, okay, maybe it's time people are ready for this.
Right. It just felt like the right time. Yeah.
So we just, you know, we put out the 3 songs and tested it and that kind of let us know, yeah, we need to get that whole album.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you think that happens? I mean, obviously, you know, so Tuxedo explores a kind of a specific era,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
in funk.
It's very, yeah, it's, you know, very specific. It's a really niche.
January
period.
Of 1982.
Right? It's like, it really is like a very short window of time that it references it.
Yeah. And then, you know, Mayor Hawthorne sort of references.
Yeah, it's a little broader, yeah.
Absolutely. But, yeah. You know, it started kind of with Motown, right?
Right.
And then expanded beyond that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Mayor Hawthorne is definitely a little broader range. Tuxedo is more focused.
Sure.
Which is fun. I mean, it makes it easier, actually.
Yeah, because at this point, we really know exactly what we're going
for. We just have it down now, yeah. I mean,
at first, we really didn't.
It took a while to figure that out, but.
So what was that process like?
It was just a lot of, you know, trial and error.
Yeah, there's,
I think.
You know, there's songs on the album that we cut in 2008 or 9 at first that just weren't right. The beat wasn't right. He wasn't singing right.
I think the big breakthrough, I feel like, was when I realized that I needed to just sing in my normal style. Because mm-hmm. initially, I was approaching the vocals, you know, more like the groups that we were referencing.
He was trying to sing like he had a jury curl.
Right. And it just didn't work, you know? I'm just not that guy, you know? So, right. You know, I was 2 years old in 1981. And
I think that's what really also made it our thing.
Well, yeah, once I realized that I should just sing, just be me on, you know, and that like, you know, not only did that make the whole project click, It also turned it into something new that was mm-hmm. that was more interesting.
Did you get feedback along the way that you needed to try it in your voice and it was hard for you to?
I don't know. Everybody,
you know, it's funny. Everybody loved all the versions.
Everybody just loved
it
no matter what. Like, we'd play the songs for everybody and it was just so unanimous. Like, everybody loved the Tuxedo.
Like last year when, you know, the album finally came out, right? I guess it's this year, right? You know, there'd be people that heard it in 2010 or 9. Like Jazzy Jeff called and was like, are these the same songs?
Like, we ended up going back and redoing a lot of them.
A lot of things we changed, you know.
Yeah, we just, because, you know, once we figured out the formula, it was just like, that's it, you know. We knew it. It was like, yeah, this is right.
Awesome.
So you guys are, you're both producers,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously you perform and you both DJ. And
right. We were both DJs first.
Yeah.
which is like something that a lot of people don't even realize.
It's a little rare now. Now you're supposed to get like on a TV show and then you start DJing. A DJ.
Yeah.
Right.
We
both came from that. You know, I DJed for a decade before I even released my first album.
Yeah, let's tell that story because Jackson's sitting over there in the corner.
Right.
And I know that, I'm sure the story's been told before, but I still love it, right? That, you know, you were his DJ.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so,
I mean, we were part of a hip hop group called Now On, and that's how I ended up moving out to Los Angeles in the first place. Still not like the world trade, more like the souls of over 3,000 dead in the day. Immortalized by these words that I say, far beyond the last breath of this human race. After all that we did to ruin this place, still loving our free. I actually got outvoted. I wanted to move to the Bay.
Yeah.
And Jackson and Mike Dumps, the third member of the group, they voted for LA and they outvoted me.
Yeah, you're lucky. So you guys came out a trio.
Yeah.
Came to LA.
But yeah, we were making rap music. You know, I love rap music. You know, that's,
you don't love rap music.
I do. I don't like rap life.
He's
anti-rap life.
All the stuff that I have to be involved in.
What's rap life?
Rap life is
like 30 guys.
Rap life rolling is just not having studio. Your shit together is what it is.
Everybody being late.
Right.
Nobody paying anybody.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's rap life.
Coach flights.
Right. That's funny.
So do you guys like the rap music that's being made today?
Yeah. I like a lot of it.
Yeah, there's a lot
like
of
what?
There is a lot of good. I loved the Race Remembered record. That was like one of my favorite records of the year. Bad bitches on the floor. It's raining hundreds. Throw some more. Okay. Throw some more.
I like a lot of underground stuff, like Dom Kennedy.
Throw some low.
You know, there's a lot of different guys. Big Crit. I think the Kendrick album's great.
Yeah, I thought the Kendrick album was really good for music.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's just like any other era. Like, there's bad and good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You just
right.
have to.
Yeah.
Sometimes the things being put in your face aren't necessarily the good things. But, you know, shit, when we were kids, MC Hammer was the hottest shit on TV, so.
Right?
You know, they weren't playing NWA on regular MTV, so.
No, they were not. Bust a couple bands, blow 100 fast.
I just made 100 off of 50 pack. Where them bad Asian bitches holding down my city. Can we go back to the different roles you guys play in music? Singer, producer, songwriter, audio engineer, rapper. Are any of these more challenging than others?
I mean, for me, the biggest challenge in Tuxedo is just going up and playing keyboards live. By sure. far, everything
yeah,
else.
Yeah, the live just, stuff is been something doing. That we've been kind of breaking him into. Yeah,
yeah, I've never played keys live, so it's like it's been a challenge. But it's been fun. It's actually gone a lot better than I would have thought. So
yeah, I know. He's
starting to get the hang of it.
You know,
you look great in the videos.
Yeah, well, that's you know, some good.
Every time we every time we go to do like some learn something new live or something that new that he has to play, he's always like, "Man, I'm never gonna get this. I can't do it." And then like, you know, 2 hours later, he's like, "Yeah, I'm in there," and he's like doing the dance and doing it at the same time.
Are you hyping him up?
Yeah, he's
it's more just playing keys. Yeah,
he's got it. He's good.
You know, it's like when you play with a band, you kind of have to. You're forced to get in line. Like, I think if I'm just playing by myself to a track or something, it's not the same. But the energy of the band kind of forces you to figure it out, and it helps you. You know.
Yeah, you just gotta. As long as you look like you know what you're doing up there,
that's important too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because some of our better shows, I feel like I was making mistakes, but nobody even noticed.
No.
Yeah, I mean,
it's pretty rare that anybody ever notices, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny, but, like, you know, 99% of the people that are watching the show are they're more watching than they are listening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like mostly about just your confidence up there.
Yeah, I mean, they're not critics, right? Feeling. They're there to enjoy themselves.
As long as you're having fun
right.
on stage, then everybody that's watching you is going to have fun with you.
So how does that experience for both of you go from DJing to being to performer, right? Like how does your experience as a DJ inform what you do up on stage now?
It definitely helps when we go to make songs, I think, because, you know, as a DJ, your whole job is to make people dance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's or to, you know, at least to keep the party going, you know, that's your job as a DJ is to.
And I think even specifically for this project, you know, we've done a ton of DJ gigs now, and even creating like the new music for the new record, I'm in my mind, I'm thinking, all right, how's this gonna work? And I'm testing out tracks that I make, you know, in our DJ gigs. Like if they've never heard it and they're still dancing to it, then
we just have such a good feel at this point for, you know, I mean, we rarely ever even prepare for a DJ set. We just show up and we're such veterans at it. We look at the crowd and we feel the vibe out and we're like, all right, here, this is what's going to work right now.
Because some nights, you know, you can go a little deeper than others.
Right.
Some crowds are, you know.
You never know until you get there.
Yeah. You really don't know until you get there.
You ever wrong about that?
But you know, there's always certain songs that bring you back. You got to know those.
We got a couple get out of jail free cards.
That's a really important part.
That's important. That's an important part of knowing, you know, knowing your music too. Yeah,
sure.
Is knowing when to get out, how you can get out. What's gonna save you right now?
Yeah. We've only had one experience where I felt like we really. We were in Europe our first DJ run, and when the album came out, we tried to give them a little too much G-funk. It was going. The first hour was going so good.
It was so good, yeah.
And then, as soon as they heard some rapping, they were just out. Like it was
immediately out.
In London?
This was in.
No, where was that?
Rotterdam.
Yeah.
It was the last gig of
the Netherlands, I think.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
Yeah, that's not really the crowd.
They were not feeling it, man.
It's so hard for us, too, because we're such huge fans of the G-Funk.
I feel like if I like it, they need to like it, you know?
Right.
And sometimes
we're trying to educate people, too, you know, a little bit. You know, we're trying to introduce people to things that maybe they are not used to, you know?
And to us, like the natural progression is our album was made with the influence of G-Funk.
Right.
G-Funk comes from the music that you're dancing to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's all kind of the same.
It's all the same.
You should be able to dance, but they start hearing some rap
and they're out.
You know?
Some places it works, and, you know, some places.
So we kind of had to make our own version of that and take the rappers out of there and only have Nate Dogg.
Right.
What's the best thing about working together?
I think for me, it's just like, I've never been in a group, so just
having
this like our thing is just interesting to me.
That's really a great thing for me, too.
I've never done that before.
Being a solo artist for the past, you know, 5 years or whatever, it gets lonely, man. It's nice to be part of a group again.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just to have like somebody that is on the same page as you, you know, to bounce ideas off of is just nice.
Yeah.
Somebody to tell you when you cross that fine line between keeping it G and Kenny G.
Right.
Yeah, I can go there.
Are there any artists, like, I'm sure you've said no to artists, working with artists before, but, like, what's the reason why you would say no to an artist?
You know, for me as a producer, there haven't been that many people I've said no to, but, you know, sometimes it might be a previous experience I have with somebody that just didn't go right, or... if I really don't like their music, it's gonna be hard for me to want to do anything. Sometimes it's purely like just a business transaction. You'd be like, well, this isn't enough to make me get in my room and work.
Yeah. You know? Right.
So it, you know, it can go different ways. I mean, there's people I give records to for free because I just love what they're doing.
Right.
Because it all comes out in the end. Like, you know, you get paid too much for something you probably didn't deserve sometimes too.
It's all kind of case by case, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like
we haven't actually there's a couple people that we're probably gonna do something with that want us to jump on stuff, but it's, we just don't make that much music really, like as Tuxedo. So it's kind of hard to really sit down and
we did a record with Pitbull, though. That was like, I think that was kind of a shock to everybody.
That was a shock, yeah. So, yeah. But that was more, that, you know, the Pitbull thing was more of like, we put our song on SoundCloud, somehow he discovered it. And
he just, know, really kinda, loved it.
He just wanted to sample
he,
it.
He so. Wanted to be involved with it somehow. Yeah. And
they actually wanted to sign us, too.
Which right.
Is oh, wow.
That's crazy.
So how does that change things, then? Does it, I mean, you start getting Pitbull fans showing up?
You know what's so funny about it? I don't think any of our fans even know about that version.
I don't know if they do.
We just play our version, and that's the one to them. Tuxedo. This joint has got me open. Mr. Worldwide. I don't know how I do what I do. I just do it. You know the resume. Call it what you want, or as it may. Not from the Bay, but hella pay. Every day above ground is a good day, so I celebrate. Mommy got that bubble gum booty. I wanna run through it like Rudy. She said, do you own Nike? I said, not yet. She said, then just do it. Fresh at the Grammys in a tuxedo. Play about 18 holes on any given day. Tiger with CeeLo. I don't know. Yeah, I think we felt like that, you know, maybe...
We just felt like there was very little crossover in the audiences, that maybe it'd be good for us to actually get some exposure to, his audience.
And, you know, we didn't go into creating a track for him or whatever. We're just doing our thing. And I think that's how it's going to be anytime.
Right. Yeah. That's a big deal, actually. I mean, I guess that's kind of the main thing. Is like,
as long as we're doing our thing.
Yeah, man. We're not going to do somebody else's thing.
Yeah.
Like, but if somebody comes to us and they're like, we want to get down with the Tuxedo thing, then...
That's always cool to us.
Yeah, it's cool, man.
Sure. And what about, as Mayor Hawthorne, how do you look at those kind of collaboration opportunities?
I'm doing a bunch of them right now.
Yeah.
That I'm super excited about. And a lot of them are like things that just, I think people just wouldn't expect me to do, you know, like... I'm doing like a 90s house kind of track right now with this.
Okay.
I just did one with Detroit Swindle too. That was actually like a pretty big joint on Europe.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's nice for me. It's cool because I really do listen to all that kind of stuff and I love it. And I rarely get a chance to venture out that far.
Right.
Sure.
So if somebody comes to me, you know, it's 100% about the song, you know. Like, I don't necessarily even care that much who you are. It's like, if the song is great, and I like, you know, I really like it, then I'm doing it.
Material like you've produced, you know, your own records, mm-hmm. and then you've worked with other producers on stuff. Is there a magic formula to that, or you know, do you have a preference?
I think it kind of goes in cycles. You know, I'm like my last record, I did hardly any of the production on and I had, you know, I worked with all these incredible guys like Greg Wells and Pharrell Williams and Oak and Pop and Jake One, and you know, it's definitely really nice to have somebody doing 50% of the work. I'll say that, because when you're producing a whole record yourself and writing all the songs and playing everything and tracking it all, I mean, it's a lot of work, man.
For sure.
It takes forever, Holmes.
How do you guys stay motivated if you're doing all of that? I could see how that could get exhausting.
I mean, you know, it's funny, like when something feels good, you just keep going with it. You'll give up on something real quick if, you know, the idea just doesn't really click in the beginning. And I know, like with a lot of our songs, like if it doesn't feel good off the first 10 seconds, then it's just not going to
be like, okay, let's try something else.
But, yeah, you know, and it's more because of that, the kind of music we're doing and what it's supposed to be is fun.
I feel like that
give you that feel.
We have, the reason that we're able to do that, though, is because we have two of us.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So that
that's
if true. We want to just, like, scrap something and just start another thing, we can just do it really fast. I mean,
because, you know, a lot of times I'll just, you know, it's funny, for one, that on the new album we did a song where we actually did everything together in the studio for once from the beginning.
Mm.
Actually, I think we started on Train or something, but... that was even different, you know, to like do a record where we made the beat together and we came up with the chorus together.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll kind of make a track and then he'll be like, I got some, you know, or he'll write it wherever he's at. And then we'll get in a room and then finish the song.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it is different. Like, you know, I make a bunch of tracks, some of them are going to hit them, some of them are not, you know?
Right.
So, and that's, it's the same way with me with my rap stuff.
I mean, a lot of times it's like, yeah, we'll start with like an idea that he came up with too. And then by the end of it, we'll end up with a totally different song. But like, it was the idea that sparked the whole thing, you know?
Mm.
Mm-hmm. There's really, I don't know, yeah, to quote.
There's no exact way to do
quote,
it.
To quote, one of my favorite rappers of all time, Jamal Buford, the formula is not having a formula.
Radiant black man in your state again. Your favorite transplant moving crowds. The bay before back down to LA and in the A in a packed house like you're moving out. The sweet science. Elite rhyming. Complete mind bend in deep concentration with each concept, but really though you already know. Hard body raps with that hard-headed flow. She say she want that hard work and she want it slow. Cut her like a barber, trim on the low. Then I'm gone on my outer space, traveling to modern day Babylon's cloudy green ambient.
Right, it sounds like that, for sure.
So since you guys both kind of came, started in hip-hop and have that, so do you remember your introduction to hip-hop?
Absolutely, I remember my introduction to rap music. It was LL Cool J's Bigger and Deffer on cassette tape, and I still know all the words to that tape.
Where'd you get it?
I got it from my homie that skateboarded with me in my neighborhood, this guy Chris. He was like a little older, and his parents would let him go buy the rap tapes, because my parents wouldn't let me buy them.
They had
like, you know, explicit lyrics and stuff, and I was too young for that. I don't even know how old I was. And I mean, I was probably
8 or 9
years old or something. And I was like this little punk kid skateboarding around my street, and yeah, I had to borrow the tape from my homie.
Boy, I need love.
How'd you listen to it?
On my Walkman, my Sony Walkman.
Like in a corner, like outside.
I might have had like a little boombox or something. I don't know. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I definitely remember my Sony Walkman, though.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
And was that
with
like
the belt clip and everything?
Did you have the yellow one?
Oh, yeah.
I did have the yellow one. Yeah, I had the black one first, though. Just the raw ass, like the one that only could play. You couldn't even like.
I'm trying to get the chrome one. You remember the old school chrome one?
Yeah, sure. The one that like clipped over the top.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Was that like did you have a moment when you realized that that was like a different type of music?
Well, dude, yeah, it was like, this is for me.
Yeah.
I was like, this is music for me. I was like, this music is gonna drive my parents nuts. This is what I want.
Nice. Jake, what about you?
Well, the first rap record that I actually owned that was my own was the Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five album. I don't know what the album is called. I can just picture it, but it had like the song It's Nasty. I think that's like 83.
Yeah, it might have been 7. Genius of Love or
it was Grandmaster Flash, that era. Anyways, the people that babysat me when I was a kid, they had like an older son and he was always playing this Sugar Hill Records. I just remember a label more than the baby blue. So I talked my dad into getting me the record, and he did. My dad was real supportive of all that kind of stuff. Like, he's just a hippie on some like fuck the system shit. So
yeah,
right.
I think he loved it. You know, rap was just so you know, anti everything mm-hmm. and just different. He didn't like rap music at all, but he liked that I was so
sure
into
what it stood
it,
for.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it feels like, you know, the creative journey is can be lonely sometimes when your parents totally see another view, you know,
yeah.
religious or they don't like music at all. So
I played Ghostface Killer for my mom. And she, she wanted to, like, move me to a different state.
That's amazing. So, like, how do you balance that, you know, where, like, who guides you through, like, that creative process? Because, you know, that to be a producer, to be yeah. a singer, that's a hard road, you know?
I mean, just, like, my homies in school that I played sports with. Mm-hmm. Those yeah. were the guys yeah, that like the guys that I played basketball with and mm-hmm. stuff, like, you know, because they all loved that music too, and we just shared that bond, you know. And all of our parents hated it, but like, I don't know, that was part of the reason why we loved it so much.
So what about now when you make music? Is there a listener in your mind that, like, are you picturing somebody that you write for?
It's not the listeners usually.
No, you know what? I don't know. I just don't work like that. Like I write, I can only write what I know, and I write music that I would want to listen to. And that's it.
That's, you know, exactly it. Yeah.
I just don't, you know, I feel like if any time I try to, like, write for somebody else, it's just like it just doesn't work.
Yeah, it's
it just feels doesn't feel natural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, as a producer, I'll get somebody's, you know, like my publishing A&R would be like, man, you got to make something like this for Jay or whoever. And I'm not good at that. I just kind of mm-hmm. make what I make, mm-hmm. what I like to make, and then it ends up where it ends up. Tuxedo's right. the only thing that I even make something specific for. You know? Yeah. Everything else is just.
But even that is like, you know, the tuxedo is
it's still what I want
to
hear.
Yeah, it's just we're making what we really yeah. want to ride around and listen to in the right. car. Like,
yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
He can even, like, tell if it's something I did totally on my own or if I just keep it. He's like, that's you. I just know.
Yeah, right. Like, I mean, at this point, we just know we know each other's feel and stuff.
So obviously, that creative freedom, I mean, is really important to you guys, right? Talk yeah, a little bit about the difference.
It's important, man.
So you've worked with indie labels, with majors. How's that different?
Definitely the creative control and the freedom is kind of the big difference and then just, like, you know, the amount of financial support behind you.
Sure.
So you have to, you know, it's a catch-22. Do you
want right.
to, right.
you want to do all this on your own and just hope it catches, or do you want somebody right. behind you spending a ton of money, you know?
You want somebody giving you a bunch of money, but also in your ear
lots of stipulations.
Mm. Talking right. about, you know, it should be more, it should be like this.
And it's mm. like, you know, once you get to a certain point of success, they can't tell you shit.
Right.
But it's really hard to get to that point.
Definitely.
I'm still trying to find
definitely it. The best feeling, though, is doing it on your own and having it be successful and then having people come to you.
They have to come to you.
They got to come to you.
That's really the way
on your terms.
It's supposed to happen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. It's a really difficult. It's a difficult path, man.
Yeah.
It definitely is not an easy one.
Mm-hmm. So you've been on tour with some pretty cool artists: Bruno Mars, Foster the People, who I love, Erykah Badu. Mm-hmm. What does that do for your growth as an artist?
Oh, man, that's definitely, like, how I learned almost everything that I know is just from, you know, watching other people perform and, you yeah. know, mm-hmm. just grilling other people, you know, asking, you know, how do you do this? Mm. It's like, because I didn't really have, you know, my dad was a musician and he... You know, he still plays bass and sings in a band better than me in Michigan to this day.
Nice.
And he's amazing, but, you know, he didn't really have... He was completely self-taught, too, and he didn't have any real, like, music industry experience. Or, you know, and he never really toured or anything. And So I didn't really have anybody to like show me that stuff. I just kind of had to learn it all, but through trial and error. And I just screwed up a lot, you know, and then learned from it.
So give us a screw up or something where you, you know, let's not do that again.
I mean, I feel like almost 100% of singing is just completely counterintuitive. Like pretty much everything that you naturally want to do is wrong.
Mm.
And that's tough. And then, you know, then like a lot of that stuff I had just had to learn through trial and error. And, you know, even just, you know, the way that you're, the way that you use your vocal cords and your diaphragm and the way that you're supposed to breathe and, you know, head and middle and chest voice and, you know,
right.
It's all just, it's hard. Right. It's not, you know, if you're, I'm not, you know, I never sang in like the school choir or any of that stuff or in my synagogue. So right. Like, I just didn't, you know, nobody ever taught me those things. So,
right.
Yeah.
Any feedback you guys have ever received that you like constantly shared till today?
Man, the thing that I always just come back to every time is just have fun, man.
Yeah.
It's just fun is just having fun is just such, it seems so
it seems simple, so obvious,
but and so really obvious, but like it's so easy to forget sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're like in the major label system.
Well, and once you get to a certain point of success.
When you really are, yeah, because the music business is extremely unfortunately 99% business and 1% music.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like just the sad truth of it, but that's, it's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that is just like really hard to get around.
Yeah.
But having fun is the key to everything.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
It really is.
So when have you found yourself saying, you know what, this is not fun, and like let's go, let's not do this?
I mean, that's gonna happen all the time because you know it literally is.
That's Jake
work.
Every time we do a show, go on tour somewhere.
It's work to leave your house, you know. Sure. It's work to get on a plane.
Right.
But there's yeah. work, and then there's yeah. like. This is not working.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. I mean, I've had such an easy.
We've been pretty
way,
lucky,
you know. And even with Tuxedo, like, we literally made a record that we thought we were only really making for us, and somehow we've gone around the world on it, and
mm-hmm.
you know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It just kind of it. Honestly, the lesson I got from it was like, you really just got to do what you like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you know, I spent time doing things that I wasn't all the way in on, and I didn't amount to shit. So I mean,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people
if
really
you're,
do.
Yeah, I mean, if you're just like really, if you're not having fun doing it, then nobody else is gonna have
right.
fun listening to it, or you know, or going to see you do it live. You know, it's like,
mm-hmm.
so you really just have. I mean, it's just so important, man. It seems like such a, you know, stupid simple thing, but
it is really hard to keep that though. I think once you hit a certain level of success
right.
and you start comparing yourself to other people that you're around that might be more successful,
right.
you're trying to compete with them,
or
you lose focus of where you were when you started.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, when you started, all you really wanted to do is make records and have people appreciate
start
it.
Trying to please other people.
Yeah, it's funny, I heard an interview with this big TV producer, and he was saying basically that, he was saying, you know, you go, the executives are going to have notes for you, everyone's going to tell you,
mm-hmm.
and he said, you know, at the end of the day, if your show doesn't work, it's going to get canceled.
Mm-hmm.
No matter if you followed all their instructions,
right.
and that. So you might as well make the show that you want to make,
right.
yeah.
and then if it gets canceled.
If it gets canceled, at least you're like, yeah, I made the show I wanted to make, and it didn't work, but it was what I wanted.
Because, you know, most of the people that I've encountered that are even high-level executives in the music business, their whole thing is basically just hedging their bets. You know,
right.
they're just throwing stuff against the wall, and when something starts going, they just attach themselves to it a lot closer. Everybody wants to claim the hit,
yeah.
like
yeah.
every time. Now, when, you know, something they were behind totally flops, it's like, you know, they didn't even know that.
Right. Yeah. That's tough.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't involved in that.
Like, yeah, oh, yeah, no, that was his project.
Sure. Of course.
They play hot potato real fast.
Have you had mentors that have helped you?
Yeah, you know, I've had a lot of, you know, more in producing, a lot of guys that have kind of shown me the way, or, you know, it's hard being from Seattle. There wasn't really anybody there to that had done this before, so I didn't really have a person I could say, you know, what do I do when I encounter this? But, you know, there's, you know, guys like Denon Porter, or, you know, he was a big one. He really connected me with some people that he didn't have to, that really kind of launched my career.
Denon Porter from Detroit.
He's coming today, right, to the rehearsal.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wow. I haven't talked to that dude in a minute.
Nice.
But yeah, and I take, you know, being a mentor pretty seriously, because I'm at an age now where I have a lot of younger guys that look up to me. Mm-hmm. So I just try to be real with them, man. They don't always want to hear it, but
yeah, that's awesome. That's so what
I feel like I have to be.
Yeah.
So what's something that, you know, what's a young kid going to get out of being mentored by you?
Number one, I just tell them, if you make good music, everything else is going to sort itself out. So don't worry about all this other shit. And then, you know, once you do get some money, don't spend it.
Well,
pay your taxes.
Don't waste it anyway. Yeah. You don't blow it
hold,
on.
Hold tight on that money, because you never know when you get another check.
For sure.
Can I get some Twitter questions in here?
Oh, yeah. Twitter's blowing
up. Dude, our Twitter
guys
blew up. First of all, from AlmondJoy1814. Do you have a famous dish you make all the time?
The best thing that I make all the time is banana cream pie. I make a mean
banana. You make banana cream pie?
A really mean banana cream
pie.
That is
amazing.
I've been perfecting the recipe for years.
Sir.
That's awesome.
I do, man. I've been like my.
That's awesome.
Chef Hawthorne has been in the kitchen lately though.
Nice.
I've been going hard in the paint.
He's got a mean Le Creuset set. Like he's hardcore.
Oh right, dang, you are hardcore. I don't even have that.
I'm in there, dude. I'm getting my Indian butter curry, butter chicken curry recipe down right now.
Love it.
And then the other one is, any favorite restaurants outside of the U.S. by AlmondJoy1814.
Outside of the U.S.?
Yeah.
Man, I was just in Paris for a couple weeks, and I found one of my new favorites. It's called it's called Bouillon Chartier. And it's like a really, really old school Parisian. It's French food. It's like very, very traditional French food.
Mm.
But it's not pretentious at all. It's like super, you know.
Pretentious.
It's not. It really isn't. It's like... It's like, you know, you can go in there and it's cheap. It's not even expensive. It's like kind of, you know, like a working class place that's been there for, you know, 100 years.
That's one of the things I liked about, you know, seeing you do your thing. So we went on tour, or you went on tour, and, you know, we brought Mazda in as a sponsor. The Mayor Hawthorne tour.
That was Mazda revolutionary, 2. Man.
2010, 11?
Mm, yeah, 10 or 11, yeah, one of those, yeah.
One of those, yeah.
Right after How Do You Do, yeah.
Talk about that, because that was, you know, our first opportunity to work together.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, one of the things you did on that tour was the Mayor versus Food.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like the fact that, so, you know, you're into food, you're on the road, you know, man's got to eat when you're traveling.
Yeah. Well, the idea behind that really was like, I was going to do that anyway. So,
right.
You know, that's what I do when we go on the road. The
Yelp and record store.
Yeah. The very first thing is, where are we going to eat? And then the second thing usually is, where is the record store?
Right.
You know, so
awesome.
I'm going to be going to these awesome restaurants that I love anyway, and so I may as well just film it and let people know.
Yeah, right. I thought it was great. And, you know, some of them weren't fancy. A lot of them, you know, was the burger spot.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite restaurants, probably my favorite restaurant in the world, is Lafayette Coney Island in downtown Detroit. And it's chili dogs. I mean,
nice.
That's what it is. It's,
yeah.
You're eating there for less than $10 every time. I mean,
that's amazing.
One last question.
It's all about the experience.
And this is to the both of you from @official Baxter? Okay. What did you think about while creating the album, and what helped set the tone for it?
I think a lot of what we were thinking about was just trying to make trying to really combine G-funk and right. in the boogie in a tasteful way.
Yeah, and just basically trying to mash up those. Yeah, I mean trying to take the early 80s like post disco boogie funk stuff that we really loved. That was how we initially met, even was yeah. that we met at a rap thing. Show and we exchanged these mixtapes, and neither one of the mixtapes had any rap on them. It was all like early 80s disco funk mm-hmm. stuff.
What show was it?
It was in Seattle.
I think it was at this place called what's the place called again?
It wasn't
it's in Fremont. Nectar.
Yeah, Nectar that's Lounge. Right. Nectar Lounge. Yeah. And I don't know. Yeah, we were trying to initially we started just like trying to make music that was in that vein, and then I think when we realized that we could take like the Nate Dogg G-funk era stuff that we loved and mash it up in there, that it just turned it into something new and amazing.
Nice. All right, that's it for Twitter, but I just want to give you guys a compliment from the real Sham I Am. Those drums on those records, they're amazing.
I mean, if the drums aren't hitting, then
it's not a good song.
I mean, it's just, yeah, that's...
We might come out with the DJ Mustard remix album and just take the drums out. Put a clap on there.
Just a snap, yeah.
Nice.
Every song.
Yeah.
So going back to those records from the early 80s, what are, give us a couple favorites.
I mean, Bernard Wright.
Girl, I'm in love with you. Sure as the sky is blue. Just let me prove to you. Yes, girl, my love is true. Sure as the sky is blue, just let me prove to you. Yes, girl, my love is true.
Bernard is the name of the album.
Mm-hmm.
What the Richie Fam?
Yeah, Richie Family. I'll do my best.
I'll do my best for you, baby.
You know, Roger, Many Faces of Roger.
Sure, yeah.
Essential. All the Zap stuff.
All the Roger and Zap stuff.
And I mean, then, Uncle Jam's Army, obviously.
Yeah, Parliament is a huge one. I mean, you know, anything mm-hmm. George Clinton.
Mm-hmm. A lot of it, it's funny, it's a lot of times it'll be like an artist that...
It was really obscure stuff that was on our mixtapes, you know. Yes.
Or it might even be a familiar artist that, you know, that right, fell off, but right. they had to make a song hot for
like,
the times.
Like the
OJ song.
The OJs, yeah, Put Our Heads Together. Which is like a song that we play almost every night, yeah. and every time we play it, somebody comes up and is like,
"What is that?
Who is this?"
And they're always
expecting it's going to be some like rare, right. you know, $400 boogie record.
Like, oh, it's the OJs.
It's the OJs.
That's amazing. Yeah, and I saw you guys posted the mixtapes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've been putting mixes up on our shows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We've been recording almost every time we DJ, and yeah, we put a lot of them up just for people to jam to.
Cool. Nice. So let's go back to the Mazda thing for a minute. I want to talk about, what works for you in terms of working with brands. I know we did something, you know, for Tuxedo. We brought New Amsterdam Vodka onto help subsidize the video, right?
Yeah.
And so, look. I think, you know, we all understand that, you know, brands need to reach fans.
Right. Yeah.
The music industry needs money, needs financial right. support. I mean, we're, yeah, you know, we really, the yeah. business is what it is, right? So yeah. that's kind of the opportunity. What I'm interested in is you know, how does that, when does it work, and what are the things, like, what would feel like selling out?
We were just talking about it. I don't think I could do like an Army commercial or
okay.
anything involving the Army just feels wrong to me.
Sure.
You know, something like that. Cigarettes
is a tough one to get around to me. I was telling him that, you know, when we go over to Indonesia and do shows, like I first, for whatever really strange reason, I have a lot of fans in Indonesia. And wow. we go over there, you know, multiple times a year usually, and do shows. And the entire Indonesian economy is funded by the cigarette companies out there. And it's really hard for me because I just won't, you know, I'm not a fan, and I won't associate myself with the cigarette brands. And, you know, a lot of times that it makes it difficult to do a show down mm-hmm. there, period. Sure.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but in general, I think it's really just about finding something that fits
and makes sense. I mean,
it has to make sense.
So what about being on the product?
If it doesn't make sense, you know, then it's just like it's not good.
It's a lose for everybody.
It's a lose for everybody, right?
So, and beyond the product, right? Is there a, you know, could be a product you like, but the relationship has to work too, right? Like the what you're doing for each other kind of has to fit.
For me personally, I guess, you know, and with brand partnerships and with anybody, if you know, even if it's like a producer that I'm working with, I really lean toward people who just have like a positive attitude about things.
Mm. Yeah.
I just don't like negativity in general.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's as simple as that for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, when, you know, think about the Mazda situation. So they loved you, first of all, because at the time you were driving a Mazda.
I was.
You were driving a Mazda.
That was a big deal to them, right?
I drove a Mazda for long after that.
Hell of years.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and it, you know, that was a big deal to them because it felt authentic, right?
Yeah.
It felt like they were supporting somebody who's been supporting them, and there was something there. And then, you know, the other side, we looked at it like, you know, Mayor Hawthorne is a underground artist, right? Has a really serious fan base, but is not, you know, a mainstream act. Mm-hmm. And Mazda kind of saw itself as the same kind of thing in the car world, right?
Yeah.
So there was something
mm-hmm.
there. And then the last part, though, is that, you know, we already knew each other. We had a relationship with Jackson and your team, and I knew that, you know, it was gonna be easy to work together,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think, you know, we've all seen probably on both sides where that's not easy.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it's funny. I know, you know, I've dealt with people that have been on top and they were such, you know, assholes.
Yeah.
The people couldn't wait to see them fall so they could just step on them,
right.
You know? And it's like, that really will happen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
And you can get away with certain behavior when you are hot, but, you know,
in general,
everybody like, cools down.
And the entertainment industry, it is just so small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is.
You are always going to see that person again at some point. If you stick around,
yeah,
you are going to see those people.
That's why
again.
You got to be nice to them.
You just
right.
cannot be out here burning bridges, man. That's just like the number one rule. Even if you're like, you know, if you're just not feeling a situation, man, you just gotta like, mm-hmm. you gotta be cool about it. You just can't be an asshole out here.
Right. Yeah. When somebody
it's gonna come back.
When you see an artist sell out, does that change like your perception on working with them?
You know, the funny thing is, and we had another conversation just about the term selling out, right?
But what that even means anymore?
Yeah,
like, you know,
it changes, right?
When we came up, you know, we were young in the 90s,
right?
High school era. So,
and we came from like
everybody, man, it was selling out. You had a singer on your song,
right?
Like,
yeah,
that, you know, back
we came from
back
an era of like really hard,
let alone
rap
have
music.
A sponsorship, right?
Right,
so
right.
It's such a weird time that, you know,
if you use
you can't even criticize somebody's success
if
right
you
now.
You use the impeach the president snare, you sold out,
yeah,
because that was like pop,
right? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's a moving target, right? And I
feel like kids nowadays just
they don't care.
No,
they're
at
just
all
like, you know what? I like what you. I don't care about any of that.
Yeah, I think the crowd is over it. Like they don't care, right? What I think is what matters to you.
Yeah.
Right. Like I think if you feel like you're selling out, whatever that means.
I mean,
it's
I definitely do still. I see like.
I see moves people make, but it's just because I...
Well, I see my followers on Twitter even, like, when I dyed my hair blonde, like, it was like, I lost some people off of that. Like, some people unfollowed me off of that. They were like, oh, no, he sold out. I'm out. That was it. That was the line.
That's the last.
And you know, so obviously, like, there is definitely still, you know,
that's
and the people
funny.
That, like, the people that fell... There's always going to be people... that fell in love with a specific thing that you did, and that's how they fell in love with you.
Right. Yeah.
And if you deviate from that in any way, you're gonna lose them. But you just can't worry about those people, man. Mm-hmm. You just gotta keep doing you.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of last time I thought somebody sold out. I don't even know.
It's hard now.
I really don't know. No, but it was like, for us, like being in hip hop at that time, like that was a constant, that was an everyday conversation.
Yeah. We also just
It was know. More, I feel like it wasn't even necessarily, it was more of a musical choice of being like so-and-so sold out. As opposed to like, oh, he did a deal with St. Ives, because we didn't think Ice Cube sold out when he went with St. Ives.
But when Hammer did Popeye's Chicken.
But that was flagrant. Now, I don't know if we could do a popcorn chicken ad right now and still win. Maybe because we're not serious like that.
I just think as long as people we did it like, in our way, it would work. Like, it's when you just completely, like, switch your whole style up.
Yeah. Last night, Russ Beeler, owner of Lake Edna KFC, opened Hammer's eyes to new popcorn chicken. Delicious, crispy, bite-sized morsels. A whole new way to enjoy the Colonel's chicken.
Come on, Hammer.
The problem was, no one could get him to go on until the last piece was gone.
That's pop.
New KFC popcorn chicken.
Yeah, like if you're like an underground person and then all of a sudden you're like doing a Mercedes-Benz ad or something. It's like,
oh, right. Yeah, then that's
that's not you.
Sure. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I think it's hard. It's definitely harder to sell out now than it was. And it's also, I don't know, from our perspective, I just feel like a lot of people, you know, from like your average fan has no idea how hard it is to make money in music.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we know how impossible it is to make a dollar at this. So like, we don't look at anybody wrong for like, you know, we don't look at anybody sideways for getting the check.
Right.
I might laugh. That's about it.
Yeah. I mean,
oh yeah, he got
just like, but yeah, you can't fault that person. You're just like, hey man, get that. I'm like happy for some people.
I think it's more, you know, it really is coming from an authentic place when you're making the record. All the rest of the stuff that happens is
right.
It's just business.
It's hard out here.
You know.
Yeah. Of course. Absolutely. Are there partnerships that you've seen, like be obviously understanding that they got a check, but that you're like, yeah, that works. Like I can see why, you know.
I thought this recent thing Nas is doing with Hennessy kind of makes sense. It's like a cool, it's just cool to hear like the song on the commercial.
At
like
least,
for me,
at least
you know?
It wasn't. And they Manny picked a Pacquiao. Good. That, yeah. That was one that did not make sense. Yeah.
And Hennessy.
Yes.
Yeah.
What?
Manny but I mean, you know, you're hearing
and Hennessy.
You're hearing like New York State of Mind on a commercial. That's cool.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Nas and Hennessy makes a lot of sense. That's your audience, man.
For sure.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. Hennessy really was fighting that for a long time. They were trying.
They were
so
trying,
hard
trying
to
be
fight that.
Like mm-hmm. Some sort of elite status.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, you know, embrace.
You can't pick your fans.
Right. You can't pick your fans. You just right. gotta embrace that, man. You gotta, yeah. Those people
be happy they're there for
right.
you.
You're right, exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
That's cool.
All right. Any questions for us? No, I'm just kidding. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah.
So give us a quick what's next for Tuxedo, what's next for Jake, for Mayor.
Lots of shows.
Tuxedo, we're heading out on tour. Yeah, we're taking the Tux on tour.
Okay. Is it the same Tux every show?
No,
variety.
We have many, that's good. Many tuxedos.
We have four or five tuxedos. Yeah.
Nice. domestic?
Both.
Yeah, we're doing mostly the U.S. and Canada, and then we're headed to Japan for a little while. And we're doing Asia also, yeah.
And Australia. Nice.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah.
And is there going to be another Tuxedo record?
There is going to be another.
That's already
nice.
Emotions. Sure,
yeah,
so.
That's, man, we're already
feeling
well,
good, feeling
well,
good about
well
what we got
underway.
So
nice.
We're going to be playing some new songs.
We always play our new songs
on the
DJ.
Tour, even too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
live.
Yeah, that's right.
We have songs that are for the next album that we're already going to be playing in the live show
nice.
On this tour.
And what's next for Mayor Hawthorne?
I am working on my next album, and it's It's going really well, man.
Multiple fire emojis.
I definitely have like a really, I can't give anything away yet. I know I really want to, but I have like a, man, I really have like a strong, it's not like a concept album, but I know what I'm doing on this one.
Nice. That's nice. All right, cool.
You should know by this time.
Yeah.
I think we should be there.
Well, you know, yeah, it's something new, but it's like, I definitely am, I'm no longer with Republic Records, uh-huh. Universal. So I'm kind of a free agent right now. So it's giving me more freedom to do what I wanted.
Nice.
Which is nice.
Well, we can't wait to hear what's next.
Yeah.
Where do we find everybody online?
TuxedoFunk.com.
At Tuxedo.
Yeah.
At Jake Uno and at Mayor Hawthorne.
At Mayor Hawthorne.
Nice.
Nice. Okay.
All right. Thanks for doing this.
Boom.
Man, fucks with the Tux.
Yo, if you want to reach out to us, hit us up on Twitter at Rebel Radio Net or come to our website, rebelradio.net. And don't forget to subscribe on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com, rebel_radio.